fucking 1,200 different goddamn pop-up messages.
We got audio.
What's up?
Oh, not much. I'm eating breakfast.
Egg and bone broth. I'm drinking breakfast.
Oh.
Not the kind of breakfast I used to drink, but the new kind of breakfast. When you were talking about Mountain Dew, we used to do Dew-ritas. We used to put tequila in Mountain Dew.
Oh, yeah. That's good
don't,
stuff.
Don't put it in Gatorade. It makes you drunk really fast. Made that mistake a few times.
I was a big fan when I was a drinker. I was a big fan of vodka and Monster.
Ouch.
And so it was instant hangover, instant angry drunk.
Yeah. It's like fucking dick fuel right there.
It totally is.
Well, shit.
I guess it's we're finally getting to meet. It's close to in person as we get on the internet.
I know, how fucking weird is that? Like, I feel like I know you really well because we just like jackass back and forth, but like
I don't believe we've
ever shared space.
No, and it's funny because we literally just had that one chat, and I don't know, like I was watching you do your video blogs. And I'm like, this is what I do already. And, you know, you're no stranger to technology, obviously. And
fucking wish I was.
Right? It would make life easier. It just struck me as like, this is going to be the thing that kicks it off. I've been sitting back for probably the last year, really thinking hard about it. Because I'm a fan of Kevin Smith and I like his Smodcast network that he built of all these different podcasts that he does. And like, I've been doing the Welt Music Cast for shit. I mean, almost as long as I've been doing Welt. So like 20 years almost now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something like that. It's been a long time.
Totally.
And I didn't start doing interviews with people until COVID. And the more I kind of went along, it was like it made sense. I'm like listening to other podcasts and I'm like, that makes it interesting, is that like back and forth with people, and then like it gives me something to break it all up, so I'm not just like sitting there like a radio DJ just playing music the entire time.
Right.
So I started out doing that, and it's, I don't know, it's worked well. I haven't done it consistently enough, and I thought, well, if I start doing something else, then it'll all kind of more fall in line and I'll hopefully get my shit together and keep doing this. So I guess
that's one of the things that I find challenging is I have so many areas of interest and some of them don't make sense together on the surface.
Right.
It's like, how the fuck do these pieces fit together? But like, I mean, at this point in time, I feel like everything fits together. I mean, we, you know, it's like looking at social media feeds. It's just a big fucking mishmash of everything. And I'm like, I could probably just make my own shit follow right. that. And it's like, I'm the sort of, you know, the hub of all of it. So,
right. Yeah.
You know, this, the fact that we know each other through industrial music and the fact that we have all these like side conversations because we're more than just industrial music.
Right.
And so it's like, what are all the pieces that make it actually more interesting?
Well, and that's the thing is that as I thought about doing this network, I'm like, the music's only so interesting. You know, I mean, you worked in the industry as a tour manager, and I don't know what else you've done, but I know that, you know, it gets old. The rock star shit gets old.
Yeah. But I mean, also like the interesting thing to me with working with the bands that I worked with were the people.
Yeah.
Industrial music specifically is kind of blessed with a bunch of like very smart, weird, funny, creative people. And it doesn't always like one of my favorite Skinny Puppy moments was the venue that's right next to Disneyland. We were doing a show on July 4th and like the whole audience is inside and they're all like spooky and waiting for the band, and everybody from the tour, I can't remember who was opening for that tour, but anyways, it's like 20 of us out back watching the fireworks, like fifth graders going, and it's like they're scary costumes, but it was just like this goofy, like childlike, fireworks. And like the show was like 20 minutes late because the band wanted to watch the fireworks, like the fifth graders were, you know, I mean, it's
that's hilarious because it's like, I remember doing a show with Kevin, he does a lot of DJ shows here, and my friend Kaz. And so I got to open for one of them at the Cannabis Cup when they first legalized weed here, and that was cool. But this show was like at New Year's one year, and I remember there was fireworks going off, and I was with Dave Wright, not breathing, standing out on the balcony. And the room that we go through is like the EBM room, where it's like all the unsa, like, newer, like stompy shit that kids like now. And Dave's like, "That's the safety dance guy." Like, so now anytime I hear that EBM unsi shit, like, I can't not hear do 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 do
Totally.
do.
It's so
Dave
great. I
Wright.
mean,
Dave Wright's my favorite. Like, he's probably my favorite personality out of everyone that I've met. Like, we just were like family. Like, I remember he came, he was hanging out with his daughter and his wife once, came up to play a synth festival we did. And my dad's hanging out with him in the backyard, it's like, it's very weird. It's very meta, and it's just like, yeah, my musical heroes are sleeping on my couch,
Yeah, totally. I went
like.
to a barbecue at Kevin's house, Kevin Key's house, one time, and he was playing Senior Coconut, which was just kind of unexpected to like have this like total Southern California pool party barbecue thing and Senior Coconut's playing. And I'm like, if only the kids could see this.
Yeah, right.
Even like I remember Dylan from ChemLab liked Steely Dan, and we would roll up to venues and Steely Dan is like pouring out of the tour van and everybody's just like, what the fuck? Like,
Yeah, I was just recently dating a girl that just loves Steely Dan, and I was like,
I know it's actually really musically complicated. It is not something I
is.
just put on for the fuck of it, but I can appreciate,
Yeah. You have to. You have to. I mean, I remember when I met Jared, and he was talking about jazz, and he was like talking about DJing some at, I think it was at 9:30 Club, and he was doing a jazz night, and so these guys are doing like free jazz, and he's playing records, and he said that some jazz guy, like trumpet player or whatever, was playing along to Attack Ships on Fire. He had just got the 12 inch that just came out. And like, he was talking about how it was like free jazz, ministry jam, it was like, or whatever that was, Revolting Cocks, same
yeah.
difference.
That's awesome. I know, right? Same
Yeah.
pile of people, just stacked differently.
Right. So that's kind of how we met. I remember like my first contact with you was getting a package full of ChemLab t-shirts at the end of Midi Ghetto. And they ended up in your possession because you didn't want to take them back overseas. And he was like, "Here, you store these for me." And so they all ended up at my house. I ended up giving those away at the Welt Music Festival. And I remember I was telling Jared there was a homeless guy running around that I gave a shirt to, and it said rock scar on it. And he's like, "I'm a rock scar. I'm a rock scar." And I wish I would have got video of that, because that would have been the best promo for ChemLab like of all time. But
Yeah, totally.
should have, could
I
have, would
think,
have.
yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So like, you had a good run doing tour managing. How much of that did you do?
I mean, like tour managing for ChemLab, basically Jared wouldn't give up the money belt.
Yeah.
So it was like, I don't know how much I would even consider that, having then gone on to like full bus tours. I was like, I think I was basically just like a sort of a an anchor to the chaos,
Yeah.
trying to get the van from one place to another.
Yeah. And you need that though with those guys, because.
Well, and like Jared would not let anyone deal with the money because I think he needed to like have the money going to places that he wanted it to go to,
Yeah.
meaning
Yeah. And he has
nose or
other things. It's
like.
like, yeah.
I don't want to like really tell tales out of school, but like, yeah, there
Ah,
was some
shit. He doesn't
creative
like
accounting.
you.
So I mostly, I mean, I did when I got to bigger tours with like KMFDM and Skinny Puppy, it was more like stage. I did stage managing a lot,
Right.
which did not go over well with the local crew. Speaking of gender, like I had people just stood in the truck and wouldn't listen to me. And I'm like, we're going to stand here all fucking day because I'm the one telling you how to pack the truck.
Right.
You know,
Right.
they were just like, I'm not taking on. And this is like when I was like more female presenting. And so they were just like, you know, there was certain venues that I would every single fucking time would be a pain in the ass.
Yeah. And you just knew when you went to those towns, you're like, "Oh, fuck, here we go."
Yep, here we go on this fucking bullshit. The one in Cleveland, the Odeon, Odeon, Odeon.
Cleveland is probably fucking Ed Deadman. He was always doing shows in Cleveland, and like, That guy was like, he was a monster from what I could tell, but I
Yeah.
don't know. I made him into a hero because, he got murdered, and that was when we started about music. And Jared calls me, and he's like, "Call it a tribe." So I did. The rest is history.
Yeah,
But I was
totally.
like, I don't want to be a record label. I don't want to do all that shit. I don't want to own someone's art. Like, that's
Yeah.
ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I just looked, Cory Doctorow just came out with a new book about how to get around DRM that I'm really interested in checking out.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds cool. I mean, it's really nice to see artists kind of empowering themselves and taking their art back
Yeah.
from an industry that doesn't really exist anymore, and they're kind of creating their own now.
I mean, I started on label side. I was doing CD packages at Sony in the early mid 90s. And that was terrible because the band would, I was like the only person from the label the band would see. And they're like, why are we getting so fucked over? And I'm like, I don't know. And I ended up leaving that. It was a big pile of bullshit. And then
Right.
I became a roadie. And then I was on the road doing band tours with Chem Lab. Then I was doing bus tours with the bigger bands. I was mostly a drum technician, servo. Had that big fucking alien metal welded rack situation. So that
Seen
thing
pictures of that.
needed
That
a
was way
handler.
before my time,
Oh Jesus, that thing was
but
crazy. I mean, like basically what I did for fucking Chem Lab was just try to keep Jared from destroying the shit.
right.
He would find the fucking kick drum mic with his microphone cord every fucking time. Like no matter where I put the kill switch for the guitar pedals, he would like stomp on the fucking kill switch. I'd be
Well,
like,
he would he and that was the thing, is he had to have that fucking like 100-foot cord so he could crawl up on the fucking in the attic while he's singing.
He did a like lasso with a fucking SM57 and fucking just nailed this woman in the audience and bloodied her face, caused a whole ruckus. Like there was just so much, like it was fun. I don't know if I could have done that for more than I did it for. It was
Everyone I know that works in the industry, I know a guy that he's doing high level pro audio and does amazing production, does his own work on the side, and has like five projects or something he's doing, juggles all of it, and tours around the world. And like he's, I think he's in Europe or so, I don't know.
Right.
But he did like Curse Mackey's last two albums, and it's just interesting because he's like, he's like, I've been doing this for like 10 years now. And he's like, you just burn out
Yeah.
because you're on the road like most
Yeah.
of the year.
Yeah.
And, I'm like, how does your girl just like sit at home waiting for you all the damn time? Like, he's
I
like,
couldn't look
yeah, I
out
need
for
to
them
get
at
back to
all.
relationship stuff and
Yeah.
life.
Know.
And I think that's a kind of a nice segue too, is that so then life happens and, I met you through all the music and stuff, but I really kind of started falling in love and like really kind of idolizing you, not only because of like, wow, like, at that point in time, you like you really rocked it and got out there and did some cool shit. But then it's like you've got this high level position with Microsoft, right?
No, I'm at Gates Foundation right now
Not a
with
Gates. Well,
like,
Gates now, but I mean
please
like
kill
you
me.
were at Microsoft at one point, right?
Microsoft, Amazon. I was a creative director at IBM. Like I was like, I thought it was funny at first to collect big corporate brand names on my resume. Cause I'm like, hey, you're letting this squatter junkie run around your fucking building on a,
Right.
like, honestly. And then I looked at my resume and I'm like, fuck, that's actually a pretty good resume. Like shit, you know? So then
Yeah.
I went
It's
like,
impressive.
I went the money making route and then realized that that was bullshit.
Right.
Like I was like, I feel fucking empty and terrible. Like I remember one of the last tours, I came off one of the last tours I was on. I was standing on Madison Avenue outside this big ad agency that I was ready to go to work for. I'm in my little like ad agency clothes, and this fucking tour bus goes by at like 9 in the morning. Why the fuck was it in Upper East Side, Manhattan, whatever? But I was just like, fuck you, universe. Like it just
Right.
felt like such like a slap in the face. And like
Yeah.
I think since that period of like feeling like, okay, I really felt more alive doing this other stuff, but I like the security of having this paycheck. And then I realized, you know, with the world burning down and the way the financial experience is happening, it's not even really security.
No.
So
Everything.
now I'm at the point where I'm like, I can't, you know, so
Yeah, like just saying that, it reminds me of one of my favorite pieces that Henry Rollins did when he was talking about how when he became a movie star, he was like, Oh, he's like, I looked at it and I could go right back to, working in a ice cream store, or working in a pet store again, because that's what I'm looking at, like, and this music shit could come to an end any day now. And so that's why he's like, I took every job I could get when Hollywood came knocking. He's like, yes, I played a cop, I did this, I did this. It's like, I tried out for everything because, I want to work. And I always really admired that about the guy. Like, whether I like everything he's about or not, I don't really know, but just that work ethic that he has, just, I mean, he gets out there and grinds, and it's like he works out every day. Like, he just has like this regimen, this schedule. He reads like crazy. He goes around, travels around the world. It's cool. Like, I mean, it takes a lot of drive to be like that. It's definitely admirable.
Yeah. I mean, like something you just said, like, you don't know if you agree with everything you said. This is one of the things I also think is a thing we need to look at is like people getting thrown out because they're problematic. You know, like they say one fucked up thing or they have one fucked up opinion and then they get chucked, right? So, like, I'm kind of interested in like, you know, what things are problematic people saying that are actually useful or interesting? Like, how can that
Yeah, it's like we had that conversation about Dave Chappelle,
Yeah.
and it's definitely a thing where it's like, I go back and forth sometimes with some of the things that people say, but it's like, at the end of the day, like, they can say whatever the hell they want. Like, that's what opinions are all about, and that's what dialogue's all about. And supposedly this country's supposed to be about that, and like, we're supposed to be diverse and we're supposed to be able to say and do what we want. And in the cancel culture now, that's not the case at all.
Yeah. I know. I mean, like, I think the best thing that came out of that conversation, because you were really asking me what I felt about Dave Chappelle's whole, like, kind of transphobic stuff. And when I said, it's just not interesting to me, like, it's kind of disappointing because he's a really smart, funny person, and 846 was amazing. And for him to kind of come out with these, like, cheap, lame, not very funny, like, you know, basically, like, cheap shots, I'm a little disappointed. And that was like, oh, I am disappointed in him, you know?
Yeah, and that's generally, I guess, where I kind of I land on it too, where it's like, I'm not gonna like not follow anything the guy does ever again. I mean, that's ridiculous. And like you said, I mean, you can't just base your opinion on everything on one thing. Now, however, I will bring up Afrika Bambaataa, because fuck that motherfucker. He was raping little kids the whole fucking goddamn time he was doing his job. And so anyone brings him up, I'm like, no, I'll cancel that guy all day long. And it's like, yeah, that immediately kills everything that you did for pop culture and for hip hop out the window. Fuck you. You're done,
There's a bunch of people politically that I'm like, yeah, I don't really have a lot of anything for some of those people who are just basically lying to get views, which is like,
It's just pandering,
So yeah, I mean, it is, it's complex. People are complex, you know.
And I think that's the point. I mean, that's the idea that I think we're really going for, is to kind of illustrate that, coming from totally different ends of the gender spectrum between the two of us, that I thought we could have some really interesting conversations and some interesting viewpoints on things. And that's what I value. I mean, it was like, I know that first conversation was like, I really was like, I just want to pick your brain on it, because it's like, this isn't my world at all. Like, my world is like mainly like buying gay guys now. And it's like, just the opposite of what you deal with in your world. And so it's like, I feel ignorant, but I'm like, how does this work? And you're just like, no, it's, people that are born this way, people that have this sort of plumbing. I was like, I really like that analogy. And
Did you
it's like,
see the thing I put in one of my stories yesterday where it was like assigned menace at birth and assigned feral at birth, as
no, I
opposed to
didn't
assigned
see
male at
that.
birth and assigned female at birth?
That's hilarious, though.
There's another guy called Mac McGregor, who's a trans guy who does, he just wrote a book called Positive Masculinity. And I was just listening to him speak and he was like, yeah, so I got a birth certificate. I got an F on it. I was like,
That's
yes, I got an F on my
awesome.
birth certificate.
And that's the whole thing that, I have a lot of my friends. I was literally just talking to one of my friends on Facebook, where they were like, oh, you got to hit me up about this. I'm like, well, you're on my short list of people that, I'd like to talk to at one point about it, because They were born assigned male and are just non-binary, and they're not really, they're kind of ambiguous about their gender, and that in and of itself is the gender, and it's like that kind of, that whole thing that you were talking about, where it's like, why does anything have to be anything?
Yeah.
Why does it have to follow someone's idea?
I wore my favorite gender t-shirt for you. My favorite tweet. Gender is a performance, and I intend to bomb at the box office and be enjoyed mainly as a cult classic. And that,
You go for the Tarantino type
I'm going for like some kind of weird, twisted, art something
thing.
problem.
I'd say you're more of a David Lynch aesthetic, though.
Yeah, I remember that on network television. I mean, I didn't know about anything about gender. I mean, I was completely fucking clueless. I don't know if like, so I basically had my boobs removed when I was 18.
Oh, really?
I was 17 and a half, 1985. I called some guy in the phone book and was like, I had read in Dear Abby that I could have my boobs taken off of my dad's health insurance. I know nothing about gender or top surgery or any of these things. I'm just like, fuck yeah, they're gonna take my boobs off. I call this guy, I go into his office, and he's like, I'm like by myself. And he's like, you have to be legal age for this to happen. I'm like, okay. So I go away. I come back 6 months later. I'm like, hi, how you doing? And he was like, for an 18-year-old to be doing this by myself, like he took me very seriously. And he's like, I'm gonna leave a little bit of breast tissue because you may want to breastfeed. You may want kids. I'm like, I don't want kids. And he's like, that's the deal. That's what's either we're gonna do it. That's what's, and I was like, fine. So like he basically took 4.5 pounds off
Wow.
the chest. And I had like no boobs for most of my life until I started aging. And then the cultural messages, particularly one toxic ex-partner, was like, this punk thing isn't cute. You need to like get your shit together. And I was like, I was raised by my dad. Maybe I never learned how to be a girl properly. So then I went out and got like makeup lessons and heels, and like I call it the decade of femme. And like when I
Right.
think about where I have the most grief and where I feel the most loss, it isn't like the drug and drink days. I have some
Yeah.
very fond memories. It's actually
Yeah.
this decade of femme where I was like completely disconnected from myself. And
And
then I had to learn about gender, which
you
just
didn't feel
started
like
like,
yourself any of that
no.
time?
No, I was like more and more taxidermed and just like, which is why I love this quote about gender being a performance. I was performing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a like you said, it's a strong conviction to have at 18 years old. I mean,
Yeah.
shit, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I mean,
I
I was
know.
17. I dropped out of high school, and I was like, I'm gonna go work at McDonald's. Like, I know what to do. This is better than high school. And like, yeah, I worked fast food for like 3 years, and I was back. I got a GED. I went to college. I got a 2-year degree and got another shitty job and kind of just sat in that. But had a lot of setbacks in my life, but ended up in a roundabout way getting to do what I always wanted to do, and started DJing and promoting shows in my 30s. And so I kind of was a late bloomer, and in the social scene and in partying and all that stuff. I mean, I really didn't hit it. I had gone through my hard drinking. I felt like I started drinking hardcore at like 17. So by the time 21 rolled around, it wasn't a big deal. By my 30s, I mean, I was full-blown alcoholic. Like, as I'm starting to do these shows, I knew a goth bar, and there was a goth night every night of the week in Denver at that point. And I knew someone at every bar, got in for free, knew a bartender, got drinks for free. And so it was like, it was just a shit show rodeo where it was like I was literally wasted every night of the week, doing coke like crazy. And I wasn't taking my blood pressure medicine, and I had a heart attack. And I mean, that's 37 years old, and they're like, you're having a slow heart attack. Like, my heart was 7 times bigger than it should have been.
Jesus.
So, like, the lesson there is cocaine and booze together turn into a sludge that, like, is impossible for your heart to push out. And then on top of that, I wasn't taking my blood pressure medicine, so my legs would swell up. I'd lay down at night. I thought I had sleep apnea because I'd, like, wake up, couldn't breathe. They're like, oh, that's your heart stopping.
Jesus. It's fucking amazing how resilient the human body is. You know what
Well,
I
and it's
mean?
crazy. I'm in the ER, and I'm like, I just thought I had sleep apnea. They can give me a damn CPAP machine, and I'll go home. The guy's like, no, you're dying. he's like, you do a lot of cocaine. And I'm like, you can tell that from an X-ray. And he's like, I could tell from yours. It's like, your heart doesn't get seven times as big as it should be at your age, unless you're drinking and doing shitloads of cocaine. Like, you're on some Rick James shit. And I was like, yeah, I fuck with it a little on the weekends. And he's like, bullshit. He's like, you're doing shitloads of it every night. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you got me.
Kind of awesome you got that doctor.
And it was just crazy because it's like, yeah, it was like in Denver Health, like they're generally are, kind of free hospital. So it's like, yeah, at the time I didn't, why I wasn't taking my meds, I couldn't get insurance. And Obamacare, every time I applied for it, it went up. And I'm like, I made $1,300 a month, which was my rent. So like I paid my rent. And I don't know how the hell I ate and drank and did drugs. Or any of the things I did, because I had nothing but shitless layabouts on my couch and, sharing the house with me. And like, yeah, I mean, my monthly salary was my rent. So it's like, they're like, how do I afford anything? And, but I mean, I guess all I had to do was have a heart attack. And they give you the stuff like, oops, my meeting's gonna end. Here we go. Like, it just didn't set in until then how old I was getting and how much this shit caught up. And it changed a lot of things because it was like, they're like, you can go home and die. And I had to think about it for a minute. And they were like, are you shitting me? And I'm like, I don't know, man. I've had a pretty good run. Like, it's like I've kind of spent most of my life just hoping that something fucked up would happen and it wasn't my fault, and then it wouldn't be suicide, because I just have had so many people kill themselves in my life that I could never do that to someone. I feel like that's the most selfish thing in the world someone could do. I mean,
My mom killed herself, and I think that kind of inoculated me against suicide. But I found myself at 40 being like, I need to choose whether I'm living or dying because I'm doing a shitty job of both.
right.
I did have to sit there and be like, I don't think I want to die, but like, let me take that seriously. And so I spent some time like, and I realized I didn't want to die. And then I was like, great, now comes the hard work of trying to figure out how to live.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the neighborhood that I'm residing in now, where it's like I've been living with a pretty serious meth addiction for the last fucking, well, I mean, I've been doing it for about 20 years, but the last 5, 6 years have been real heavy. And I don't know, it's a weird thing, but I kind of owned it after a while, and I was like, I don't really want to quit. It's kind of cool. Like, I dig doing it. And it took me away from booze. And booze was killing me worse, I think, and costing me more shit. But I'm I don't know, I'm at least trying to hone down my usage and my stupid ass behavior that goes with it. Try to stick with the same idiots.
It is. I mean, having done a bunch of meth back in the day, I mean, I was joking that like the meth that I did was like a spa treatment next to what is around now. Like the bathtub Hell's Angels, what the fuck? I don't know what's in a bathtub.
It was a spa treatment by a bunch of fucking truckers, but okay.
It was, well, it was the ephedrine brand, you know? So,
Yep.
but
Jared used to sing about that all the
craziness, but I don't know. I'm not sorry I did the drugs that I did. I'm happy I quit when I did. I haven't done drugs in a really long time.
Yeah. That's
No.
awesome. I love hearing that from you because, like I say, I mean, I look up to you in the first place, and it's always comforting to hear that people I look up to can do it, and it's like, not that I don't know that I can do it myself. It's just more like, I like how when you talk about it, it's like you don't talk down about
No, I have no judgment about you still doing drugs. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, I worry a little bit now that I know you have a heart thing, but like also like I can't fucking judge anybody for doing
Yeah.
drugs.
Now, I talked to my cardiologist about it, and he was like, it's actually the healthiest thing you could be doing of like illicit street drugs. So he's like, if
Cool.
you're not doing the coke and you're not drinking and it's like you're smoking it, you're not shooting it, you're not you're not eating it, you're not, because I mean, there's people out there that do that shit and like, just massive amounts of stuff, and It really does. I mean, you can see my teeth. They're beautiful.
Well, most of my teeth are actually not my teeth, so I have, my teeth took a hit. I mean, I was shooting meth towards the end of my meth career. I was shooting like up to a quarter gram at a time.
Jesus
And
Christ.
then sometimes I'd shoot meth and I'd lay on the couch and I was like, God, if I move a finger, my heart's gonna explode. Like, I mean, I was convinced. I was like, it was getting, and it was 5 or 6 days in a row.
Where you just
Solid.
sit like in one position. Yeah, I do that
I
all
would
the time. People are like, what are
do
you
this.
doing? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Fucking staring at the wall.
Yeah. It's weird shit, man. But
Is.
I get it. I mean, I don't have any interest in doing it anymore, but like I don't really, I told my therapist I was doing this call with you and I had mentioned, I'm like, yeah, like there's, I mean, sometimes he's still doing meth and like he's in Denver. I'm not in danger of doing, like, I don't think she worries about me. She's fucking cool. She's trans and she's fucking
Right.
brilliant. But it was just like, yeah, I was like, I literally feel no judgment around it. And like, actually another friend of mine, a gay guy who, I mean, gay, the gay scene in meth is like, it's such a thing, right?
Hand in hand. I
And
mean,
he was, I was the only one he felt safe telling, like when he was trying to quit. And I was really like honored by that because I'm like, he knew I wasn't going to have judgment around it, that I was just going to be like, yeah,
it's a
man, I
huge
get it.
deal. Like, I mean, and it's a hard thing when you're gay and that's all your like everything in your social circle is based around it. It's scary shit. Like, who the fuck's gonna be there?
Yeah,
What's gonna
it's
happen?
fucking rough.
What am I gonna do?
Yeah. Yeah. Same with my friend here. I mean, he got caught in it. And I think he's largely, I don't think he does anymore. But
I think most people, you get sick of your own shit eventually,
yep. I get sick of like hanging out with drug people, like the dealers and the people doing drugs, and it's like really fucking boring.
Well, and a lot of it too is it's like, I mean, it's my common complaint is, when I do find somebody else that can handle it like I can, and it's like, Jesus, what's wrong with these fucking amateurs, man? Like,
Yeah, there's also
it's like, I mean,
that.
oh, I'm so fucked up. Like, dude, you do this every week. Come on.
Yeah.
Like, the shit doesn't change. Like,
I
it's
know.
not different. Like,
Yeah.
ooh, there's fentanyl in it now. Like, I mean, I was to a point where I was dating someone that was smoking fentanyl, and I just started doing it because I was like, man,
Wow.
fuck it. Well, I'll see what it's like. And I mean, but it's so addictive and it's so strong. And I've never shot anything. I shot meth once and it didn't work, thankfully. But I've never shot heroin. I've never shot.
I started shooting heroin when I was 17 years old in this notorious weekly hotel on Hollywood Boulevard. And I was shooting up with a gay male prostitute who worked Hollywood Boulevard sharing needles in 1985. And I went home. It was like one of those, this, I don't know. I have this weird tendency to like, and at 17 years old, I was sitting on the roof of this hotel on Hollywood Boulevard. And it was one of those days, it was like blue sky with fluffy clouds, which is super rare in LA. It's usually just that like non-sky.
Speaking of
And I
David
was just like, I'm literally sitting on the edge of the building with my feet hanging over the edge. And I'm just like, I need to stop doing this. This is fucking profoundly stupid. And so I went back to my dad's house up in Central California. I was like, don't ask me any questions. I'm gonna be in my room for a week. Don't fucking talk to me. Don't worry. Don't fucking talk to me. And so I
just
basically
wait it
cold
out.
turkey. And then that fall, there was the first major news coverage of the AIDS crisis. And I had just been shooting up heroin with a gay prostitute on Hollywood Boulevard. And I was like,
You're
ah,
fucking sweating bullets, huh?
fucking sweating bullets. And so like for like a year or two, like until I moved to San Francisco, like I went from that Central Coast to like San Francisco. And then I was like at the testing clinic in the Castro, like every 3 minutes.
Oh,
And so one of the guys who started recognizing me is like, do you need to talk to somebody? And basically it had been 5 years since I'd shot up. And he's like, you're in the clear. I appreciate how committed you are to testing. But you don't probably have HIV. And I still don't. I
yeah.
somehow dodged that bullet. And then when I started shooting meth, like we had tape codes on our needles because you need to be safe when you're shooting up meth. But
Well, and it's
we
nice
were,
that it's one thing is that like they have these like places where you can get needles and testing and
Yeah.
they have like fentanyl test strips here now, which shit, you need that because you don't know what's in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fentanyl's in
Get
everything.
tested. Whoever's listening to this, go get tested. It's a good thing to do. I can now tell people that I'm about to have, like, if I'm gonna have sex with somebody, I can be like, I was tested on this date for these things. It's like the fun modern conversation, right?
Same.
Yeah.
I had a trans woman that I was dating that was positive, undetectable, and then my best friend and plug ended up just recently also becoming Positive Undetectable. And it was weird. Like it taught me a lot about how it works and like the physiology of it and the science of it. And realized that most of my behavior, like I don't really ever have anal sex. So it's like it's not really risky to me at all to be having sex with anyone. So much when it comes to AIDS because it's such a blood related disease. I was like, oh, I guess that makes sense. Never really did the math on it. And but yeah, after two people really close to me, I was like, I got to get on PrEP and just to be covering my bases. And like you say, it's just you go, once every 3 months, get your test. It's not hard, and it's not asking a lot to go. Nowadays, I mean, you just go get your blood drawn and they'll tell you, all kinds of shit from it. No, I mean, the tests were not nice when I was a
No. Yeah, I
kid.
mean, the back, I mean, it's not such a death sentence anymore either. Like, it's a lot better than it used to be. I mean, I know people who have died of AIDS. It was ugly.
Yeah, I was gonna say, well, that was another thing about the oh, how would you say it? Like that time period, when you're talking about, okay, I think we're good. Here we go. A cheap bastard, I guess, right?
I mean, I don't blame you. I have paid Zoom if you want to use it next time.
I forgot that it does that after a certain amount of
Someone's got to pay the software engineers. It's funny, like people getting mad about that kind of stuff. I'm like, it's a company that, like, we're in capitalism. Like, people need salaries and shit. Like, not everything can't be free. It just can't be. Or if it's free, there's got to be some stickiness, some.
It's funny because I work with my favorite artist that I work with often. He's part of Anonymous and a hacker, and it's just like he's like the consummate. He doesn't pay to ride buses. He doesn't pay to ride. He doesn't pay shit. He bums his way through life. I don't know how the fuck he does it,
All right,
but
some people have that gift, man.
he worked. He was like he worked for IBM as a reverse hacker, and was doing their security. And yeah, it was really weird. He was living on my couch, living like a homeless person, but making my rent for the year in like 2 weeks. And I just happened to see one of his paycheck stubs. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing in my house? Like, pay my fucking rent. Like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm buying this shit called Bitcoin.
Ugh.
Nobody knew what the fuck he was doing back then. And he's sitting pretty decent now, I guess, but.
I can't. I mean, I just that is not. I don't. I
I don't
can't.
know. He's an alien to me because it's like he literally just like cuts his nose off despite his face because he's such an activist that it's like hardcore. Just like, I just live like shit. And I don't know. It's just weird. It's like, I don't know. Life's too short.
I mean, I think a lot about this. Like, I fucking hate capitalism. I fucking hate watching people ground down to a pulp. I hate seeing, like, the more creative you are, the less you fit into the system, or, like having these jobs and, like, people are just wage slaving their way through life. I fucking hate it. I don't want to participate in it, but it's fucking here.
Well, and you gotta
So
do
there, like,
something.
we
You
need
gotta do
to.
something because I mean that's the thing is I'm not working this whole last year and it sucks because I can't do shit. I'm sitting here like this weekend when I should be in Chicago at Cold Waves and it sucks. I'm missing all my friends, missing everything. But shit happens, and it's like if that's the small price I pay to not have to be making money for that motherfucker after 20 years of just carrot on a stick. Oh, I'm gonna give you money if you do this. I'm gonna give you a car if you do this. And I never got shit. I got fucked every time I turn around. So it's like I'm just tired of that right now. And I'll go back to it though because I mean it's time to move on. It's time to start doing stuff again. And unfortunately, to do anything, you need capital. And that's capitalism. And it is what it is. But that's why I look up to you because it's like you're the exception, not the rule, that you can walk that line of doing cool shit and being your own person, doing all these alternative things and different ways, living. breaking that binary, breaking those rules, living out of the box. But it's like, even that, you have to go back into the box at some point a little bit, you know, like you can't.
I'm reaching my point of where I want to quit my job and just like fuck off and go into debt, because that's my cycle, right? I like work these fucking corporate jobs, I get fucked off, I quit, I go on like some kind of like crazy fucking situation, whatever
Right.
thing, and then I get into debt, and then I have to crawl back to a corporation and pay off my. I just paid off like a massive amount of debt from the last cycle
God.
of me.
Yeah, I was gonna say, was that when you did the race, the rally race?
No, that was 2016. I drove from Scotland to Mongolia in a Ford Fiesta on the Mongo Rally. And
That
then I
was one
ended
thing
up
I
at
wanted to
Standing
bring up and
Rock.
talk to you about because I was like so fucking riveted.
I wanted to do an overland rally forever, but they're usually like $30,000, $40,000. It's like, you know, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
People are driving their fucking Land
Yeah.
Rovers or whatever the fuck they're driving. And I found out about this, and it's basically the requirement is you have to drive a shit hatchback
Right.
10,000 miles from Scotland, well, from UK to Mongolia. And I was like, fuck yeah. I mean, that was like a whole, that's like a whole episode in of itself. It was 7.5 weeks. I thought it would be cool to have an all-girl team. It was fucking terrible. It was Mean Girls nightmare. There was a betting pool against us. There's 305 teams that year. And like, I don't know, a third to half of them had bet against us actually
Oh,
finishing.
yeah.
They were wanting us to like kill each other by the side of the road. I got all those bitches to the finish line. We were not talking, but I have a photo of all of us together in the
And
same photo.
that's that tour manager, and you came out and you were fucking
Oh
dragging
yeah.
him by the hair probably by the end of
I
it.
fucking was. I was like alternating between like Zen Stonewall silence and like just fucking. It's also like, you know, I
It's like a
realized
drill
as a roadie.
sergeant.
Yeah. Well, I realized as a roadie, like I used to train dogs and horses, and I like my first tour of Kemlem, I'm like, oh, this is just training dogs and horses, where you're like, oh,
You
like,
up out now.
God, just barking people sometimes, you know. And I don't like being in that mode, but I fucking go in there and like terrorize people into shape.
You know, that's the thing is that you can't promote, you can't do anything else in music besides make music and not fucking have that like parent quality of some kind.
Yeah, I mean that's what I was
Because
doing. That's the
you gotta
tour
wipe
manager
asses,
part.
you gotta fucking wake them up,
Oh my
get
God,
them out of bed.
Levi was on a Chemlab tour in the van, and like the whole fucking tour, he's like, "Man, I should be on a bus. I should be on a bus all the time about the bus." Right? This is back in the days of payphones. Like we didn't have any way to get a hold, so it was always like, "Okay, by X time tomorrow morning, be at the van because we're fucking leaving." And we
Yep.
were in Chicago, which of course is where Levi's from. All
Right.
those
So
cities are
he's
pretty
dragging
close
his feet.
together. So like we, you know, we're like an hour past the point where we're supposed to leave. Levi hasn't shown up. We're going to Detroit or something, like close, right? So I'm
Right.
like, fuck it, we're leaving him. So we get to the venue. I finally get a call in the venue at like 4 in the afternoon. Levi's like, man, you left me behind, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you said you wanted to be on a bus, Levi. Get your ass on a Greyhound. So he had to get on a Greyhound. I was like, make it by doors.
Yeah.
Guts. Get your shit together. It was like always what I said, get your shit together.
Yeah.
There was
Get
another
your shit
guy with
together.
us.
I'll have another bass player on the fucking
I
plane
know.
out
I
here
was just
to
like, he was mad because I wouldn't fuck him.
Yeah, well, there's that too. I remember you
I was
telling
like,
me
I'm not fucking you, dude. Like, I'm not fucking
that.
you. He never
I don't
forgave
fuck
me, but I'm
anyone.
fucking him. Oh,
Right? Like, I don't fuck men. Go away.
no, I do fuck man. I'm not fucking that
Right.
particular man.
But I mean that particular. I mean you weren't as far as he knew, like
Yeah. I was just like, no, dude. I'm there's no way.
you may have not been all the way gay, but you were when he came around.
I mean, I just he was way too aggressive and like
Yeah.
too like argh.
Yeah, and some
So
people are just that way. It's a welcome to the fucking rock world, you
yeah.
know?
My other moment of tour managing, and it was again Chemlab, and we had this guy called Timmy Rockmore as a hired guitar. We called him Timmy Rockless because he was just like he would like get off the stage, and we're an opening band, so you have like, you know, 10, 15 minutes to get your shit off the stage. And like Timmy would be out there trying to pick up chicks and like trying to be all that and whatever. And I kept being like, Timmy, you gotta get your shit off the stage. And like over and over, this guy. So we were at a venue in Philly, and there was like a it was a big concrete hall, and it had like a fucking 8 foot drop off the back of the stage. At the end of the show, I look around, motherfucking Timmy is like way down the hall trying to pick up girls. So like he had two vintage Gibsons. I put them in the case to my credit, but I took those two vintage Gibsons in the case to the back of the stage. It was like, Timmy, get your shit off the stage. and drop them
Drop
8 feet
them.
onto the concrete floor. But the best part about that story was after wrestling with that little dick for the entire tour, I went back to New York City to my art director job at this internet company. They were like, it was the early days of the internet. They used to let me go on tour and I'd come back and I'd work. And so I was creative director at this place. And I'm sitting in my Fifth Avenue office with like the Flatiron Building behind me out the window. And guess who comes in for a fucking job interview? But little Joe
Oh,
Atlas. And I'm sitting there behind my
it was
desk.
a little rockless, huh?
And his fucking jaw hit the floor. And I was like, Timmy, you never know who you're fucking with. Now get the fuck out of my office. Like, he was just like,
Yeah, you're sitting down for this interview. Get the fuck out of here.
it was fucking hilarious that he comes in and
Right,
I'm behind the desk. I was like, hello, Timmy. Oh,
like his worst fucking nightmare.
totally. I tell that to so many junior designers. I'm like, do not fuck with people. They will show up again.
You never know.
Like, keep your shit together. Don't be a dick. Like, just don't be a dick. Anyway.
That's one I'm still learning personally. Oh man, I'm a petty bitch when I
I
want
you
to
have to be creative. You don't I'm say I'm not saying don't be a petty bitch. I'm saying be creative with
Yeah,
it.
I just need to shut the fuck up sometimes. I
Yeah,
mean,
all of us.
it's that like little punk rocker inside me still that's just like, I'm gonna be fucking heard, you know? And it's like, God, I'm acting like a fucking asshole right now, and I'm that guy. And it's funny, like talking about gender stuff, that that's a term that I use a lot, is like, I don't want to be that guy. And usually when I'm fucking up, that's because I'm being that
Yeah.
guy. And I know that a lot of my like cis female friends and exes and stuff now that I'm friends with, they really appreciate the fact that like I'm actually a friend. I'm actually an ally. Like I actually just want to go to a show with them or want to go to the club or go out to dinner. Like, you know, and people are like, well, why do these all these girls hang out with you? It's like, because I treat them like human beings. It's crazy. Like
Yeah, totally. I
it's like
know.
that weird big dick, like sorry, Charles, but Charles Levi energy.
Yeah.
It's just that thing, like guys, everybody wants me, and it's not about you, motherfucker. Just shut up, sit down,
Yeah.
learn something. You know, that's. I feel like that's a lot of what I end up wanting to do with this podcast is wanting to kind of sit back and not run my mouth so much and learn some stuff from people, because there's a lot to learn out there in the world. And in my experience, my short experience, like in the last 10 years, I'd say, really the last 5 or 6, getting more intensely like involved in the trans community and in like non-binary communities, that every experience is individual. And that's the beautiful thing about it. And it's like, it literally is a rainbow. It really is like that idealistic cornucopia of like, you know, everybody's different, everybody's their own thing. And it's cool. It's cool that people can do that. And, you know, it's cool to be like an ally to that and like be around to be supportive of that. And that doesn't necessarily mean joining the ranks, but you know, it's
I mean,
like
I feel like
I went through my little phase where I was like, do I want to be trans? And like, I had transgender people like cheering me on to do it. And I'm like, this is fucking weird. Like, you're not supposed to do this.
But I mean, I feel like there's like, especially with gender, it's everybody is experiencing the bullshit of gender.
Yeah.
And it is bullshit. It is a construct. It is completely made up. And like I was kind of mentioning the racist history of gender, which is like basically back in the 1800s, maybe even the 1700s, like it used to be one gender, male, and women just had inverted penises. And then as sort of the Enlightenment, which what a weird fucking word that is.
Right.
All the phrenology, all of the measuring skulls, all of that stuff. Like gender became the way that they differentiated white people from everybody else.
Yep.
Like, you know, and so like the gender binary came about because of trying to manage reproduction, like basically eugenics.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know, I mean, there's all this like weird shit about, I mean, there's been cultures forever that have had different views of gender, up to like six different genders, seven
Right.
different genders. And like not, I mean, they didn't live on a binary. Like we live very much in a binary society. So like binary gender fits into our binary notion of rich and poor, black and
Yeah.
white, you know, male and female, like this.
Well, and you look at the political situation right now where it's like, I never realized how good we had it in the 90s. That people were politically all over the place. People were, I mean, people were, it was like, shit, that was the age of like rap metal, It's like, it's not rap, it's not metal, it's both. Like, and it was like, this shit worked. But I mean, none of that shit works now. I mean, it's like everything's got to be, you're this or you're that, you're this or you're that. And
Do you remember
we're
when
crazy.
what the fuck was his promoter name? He put together Public Enemy and Sisters of Mercy.
I know what you're talking about. That was a fucking great tour. My brother saw that. They played Mile High Stadium here.
Yeah, they played Madison Square. I was living next near Madison Square Garden. They played
The
Madison. That
Sugar
was
Cube's open.
Oh yeah. It was like a really, I can't remember the guy who died in the helicopter crash, wasn't it him?
Think so.
I can't remember his damn name. But yeah, I mean it's the polars. I mean, like also like the people that are most worried about pedophiles and grooming are the ones having gender reveal parties. And I'm like, y'all are really disturbingly attached to children's genitals. Like everything you're doing is
And you're making a fucking party about it. Like, and what happens when that person decides that they're transgender or whatever?
Well, also, like, there's no reason to do that unless you're thinking about the child's genitals because they're pre-puberty. There's no other defining characteristics for gender aside from being an innie or an outie.
Well, and that's a whole weird thing. Like you say, like that's definitely eugenics, and that's definitely a very fucked up way to like, go through it, where it's like, oh, I'm having a girl, so I got to get dresses, and I got to get this, and everything's gonna be pink, and oh, it's a boy, everything's gonna be blue, and he's gonna play football, or
Yeah, it's really. But
I
also,
remember,
like,
dude,
it's the same people like worried about pedophiles and grooming. And I'm like, I think you need therapy. Like,
that's a whole other episode that however, we'll broach to that topic at some point. I'm gonna have to,
yeah.
but I've got my own personal experience with a lot of that shit, and it has a lot to do with shaping kind of how I look at the world now.
Interesting.
Oh, fuck it, I'll get into it. When I was 22, I was arrested trying to pick up what I thought was a 16-year-old girl, and I was an undercover cop, and I got arrested. I lost my wife, I lost my job, I lost my house, my car. I had literally just signed a 1-year lease that I had to pay the entire fucking lease to break it. But my ex-wife was like, she wanted out and was like, no, we can't do this. So I paid it all. And I mean, I had to get a lawyer. I dropped probably like $30,000 that year. I didn't fuck my whole life up. I mean, I'm still fucking my life up at this point. And it's mandated therapy fucked me up even more. I'm getting therapy to undo the therapy now. It was like Clockwork Orange. Like, I had to pass polygraph tests. They taught me to be a liar. They taught me to be a sociopath. Like, I can beat a polygraph like crazy now. And I just have some really strong views about that, I guess. Because it's like living with that stigma, scarlet letter shit. It's like, I don't know. It's been threatened, it's been leveraged as threats against me in the music community, by the cancel community, and people, I'm gonna go tell everybody that you're a sex offender. I'm like, cool, well, they all know. So have fun with that. You're just gonna look like an asshole.
I have really, really, really deep feelings about the sex offender registry as being an insanely repressive tool of the state. Most of the people on that fucking registry are, I mean, there's like instances of like a 19-year-old with a 19-year-old male with a 17-year-old girlfriend, and the dad takes exception. There's people who are like, it's like very, very like shitty evidence. There's like so many just factors of like people who like fucked up.
Well, and
Like the
here's the
fact that we
thing.
can't fuck up and recover from our fuck ups, like,
It's the thing that I struggle with the most in therapy is the whole therapy is built around empathy. Empathize with your victim, person, well, your the person that you victimized. And I'm like, what, the cop? The fake person that wasn't a person? Like, how do I empathize with a cop that like they got exactly what they wanted?
So the 16-year-old was an undercover cop, the 16-year-old. Wow. That's a trip.
And like I had chatted with them online and had like kind of like sex chat with them once, and then felt weird about it and was like, I shouldn't have done that. And for 6 months, this person called me, because back then on the paper, like, they couldn't do shit until I showed up physically in the house to meet
Right.
them. So they just fucking kept calling for 6 months. I was like, no. Finally,
That
they
feels
just
like
got me on the wrong
entrapment.
day, and I buckled, and like, literally, they're like, what were you thinking? And I was thinking I'm gonna come over here and be like, leave me the fuck alone. And
Yeah.
like, stop fucking with me. And if I go over, maybe she'll leave me the fuck alone.
Right.
Oh yeah, that's all you were thinking. No, that's exactly what I was thinking. Well, until I had a fucking gun to my head. And then I thought, maybe I should act like I have a gun because my life's fucking over. And there's a lot of days that I wish I had, you know? And that's the reality of it. And it's, I don't know, I guess it's why I'm just like, fuck it, I'm gonna talk about it, because this is something that I've struggled with recently, where it's like, yeah, it gets leveraged as shit against me. People were like, I'm gonna tell everyone you're this. Fucking do it. Like,
I
I'm
mean,
already a meth head fag, whatever. Like,
like,
a meth head fag fucking sex offender. Big deal. Like,
yeah.
and
That's
yeah.
often my go though is like I often tell my stories publicly in order to like defang them. I'm like, you're not using this shit against me. Like
Yeah,
you're not using your own
yeah,
morality
and
and your
it's.
own judgment against me because you don't know fucking shit about anything, right?
Yeah, and that's my steez. It really is. I learned that from Kevin Smith
Yeah.
early on. I mean, he literally is like the person that I look up to. And I just saw him the other night. I went and saw the Clerks 3, which is fucking amazing. And he did a Q&A after and stuff and came out and talked. And I fucking cried the whole time because it pulls it all together.
Right.
And it's like he made this touchstone when I was a kid working in fucking convenience stores. Like, that movie was my life. And here's this person that, like, it's the only reason I'm still alive right now, probably, is that I want to make film and I haven't done it yet. Not really professionally. I made a couple documentaries. I made one about my grandfather. I have a lot of documentaries in me that I want to do. And there's no reason I can't.
Yeah.
I just haven't gotten to it yet. And I feel like this podcasting is kind of going to be, I'm going to do the Kevin Smith thing, but do it backwards. And I'm going to start with the podcast and I'm going to go back to film,
Cool.
because why not? I
Yeah.
mean, I already got to play with my musical heroes. Like, I didn't ever fucking meet Jared from Chem Lab, hang out with him, like, realize he's just like a regular ass person, you know, Kevin from Skinny Puppy. It's like,
Yeah.
that's amazing to think that. I mean, I went from starting to DJ in 10 years, I was playing with my musical heroes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, most of them are assholes. It's another
There's a
story,
lot of
but.
assholes, sadly. I mean, like, there's also a reason why people want to stand on stage and have.
Yeah, I mean, I spent my entire life from like 14 on as the world's hugest Legendary Pink Dots fan. I have literally spent thousands of dollars on shit for this band. And they're a very prolific band. Like, they put shit out constantly. And I had all of it, and I spent money on all of it. And it's like, I went to go meet Erica Spell, and it was like, you don't have tits. You're not a goth, big titty goth girl. Get the fuck out of my way. And he like literally pushed me out of the way.
It's crazy.
And for some fucking chick. And I was like,
Saw a
cool,
lot of that
man.
backstage. Yeah.
Nice to meet you. Needless to say, I've got issues with them now.
Yeah.
But hey,
So Frankie was the monitor guy on the last Skinny Puppy tour we did. And I guess Frank and Kevin were hanging out, and Kevin figured out that his grandfather had firebombed Frankstown in Holland, Dresden.
no
And like
shit.
called up Frank's family and apologized on behalf of his grandfather, which I think is like the coolest
That's
story.
fucking rad.
I
Yeah.
know. It was really amazing.
You'll have to see my documentary. It's about my grandpa. He was in Pearl Harbor. And that reminded me of when we went to Hawaii, and we're there on the Arizona, and this Japanese family wants to take pictures with my grandpa.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh shit, what's he gonna do?
Yeah.
How's he gonna? He was cool.
Wow.
He smiled, took pictures with him, gave him a hug.
That's awesome.
And I was like, Jesus, that's progress.
Yeah. My dad went through Normandy during the first week, not the first wave, but the first week, and then walked all the way across France and got his leg He got hit with German shrapnel and lost his leg on his 19th birthday.
Oh.
And it never stopped him. Like, he was snow skiing and he built sports cars and like did all this shit, was just like fucking whatever. He's like a Depression era farmer. Like, he, you know, this is also how I could like get thrown from a horse and break my neck at 11 years old and like ride the horse back to the barn and then ride my bike home and not tell anybody and not
Right.
know I'm broken, three vertebrae broken in my neck
Oh
for like
yeah.
a
Yeah, and
decade.
they just fuck around and oh shit.
Like, I went and got x-rayed and they're like, when did you break your neck? I'm like, what? Like, I had
Like
no
my heart
idea I broke
attack.
my
I'm like,
neck.
no, it's just sleep apnea. They're like, no, you're
Oh
fucking dying.
was fucking funny. Yeah.
But it's interesting. That I that's why I did I started a lot of this podcast stuff and started doing a lot of these interviews because it's like I do a lot of self therapy and opening by virtue of opening up my world. People would always give me shit on my Facebook. Oh, you're being too open, or use like your diary. And I'm like, so
Yeah.
it's cheaper than therapy.
I can't remember who said the quote, we know ourselves by the way others know us. It's something like that.
Yeah. But I
Like,
mean, there's people they know all this fucking intimate shit about my life, but they fucking watch it and they follow it.
yeah.
And they, I mean, I remember when my ex Becky broke up with me over a year ago. And it fucking almost killed me. Like it just crushed me. It broke me in half. And I had people reaching out to me from all over the country. They just call me. Are you okay? What's going on? I'll just talk to you. And I was like, why are you calling me? What, who are you? Like, you know, and just like it touched me so much that more people are listening than you realize, and more people are supporting and loving out there than you realize. And it's the inspiration that kind of keeps me going. That if you're not, and it's something I'm a big fan of too, is if you're not out there doing it and being the change, then don't fucking cry about it.
Yeah.
Because that's the doing this is the only way we're going to get it out there, you know?
Totally.
It's the only way that you deprogram the machine.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of suffer from the same thing. Like, I often am just like in my space by myself. Like, I'm like, I don't know who wants to hear this random shit, but I do it anyways.
Yeah,
You
I
know?
do. I got excited the second I saw it, and I'm like, we need to do this together. Because
Yeah.
it clicked, and I'm like, yeah, no, I feel like it's a good fit. It's a good dichotomy, and I need anything at this point, honestly, to hang on to that's not drugs and not bullshit. And the music shit, like I said, it gets old, and I'm fucking tired of it. I'm tired of the politics, and everybody hates me anyway now. So.
I mean, everybody hates everything right now. I
I
think.
burned a lot of fucking bridges, though. Like I said, I'm a petty fucking
Oh yeah.
bitch.
Well.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Fuck them. Who needs bridges?
I don't know. Maybe that just means like, you know, new shit, right?
Yeah, and so that's kind of why I'm doing this. This is like branch out, because. To be honest, I mean, especially because of being doing meth in the gay scene, it's like, yeah, that's how I met a lot of these trans people. And it's like, I met so many amazing people because of meth.
I know.
And it's like, I'm sorry. But I was like, I tell people all the time, because it's this Denver, it's weed's been legal here forever. Like, we got the best weed in the world. Fuck you, California. And like, it's just funny because go up to people, I'm like, you smoke weed? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I smoke meth like that. And they're like, I'm like, what? Like, you
Yeah.
smoke weed all day, and that's cool, but like, fuck me, I'm smoking poison. Ooh, look at me. Like, it's a weird thing. It's a weird brag. It's an odd flex to make, but fuck it, I'll run with it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm
I kind of feel the same about my drug use where I'm like, I'm definitely not apologetic about it.
yeah.
I would not
No,
care
and I'll tell
if
you
they
what,
did.
it's refreshing, and it's like it made me happy. I was like, I. The whole conversation we had, and it, like I'm gonna put it up for everybody to see, and kind of have like a pretense to this whole thing before I have this episode out. I don't think I'm gonna do a whole lot of editing to this, honestly, because I think that that's it. Is it's fuck, it's our conversation, you know, it's our life. Like, it is what it is.
We didn't even get into the weird Hellraiser gender question, or like the sort of like some of the weird stuff about gender we're going to talk about,
We
which is
didn't, and I think that maybe we'll just save that and we'll do that like next week or something, or 2 weeks, whatever you feel like.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
I think maybe every 2 weeks is probably good,
Yeah.
because every week gets grueling,
Yeah, I think you're right.
and like
I'd be down to do
expectations,
that.
like, and if we miss some here and there, fuck it, I'm not gonna. We've got
I
lives.
remember seeing Diamanda Galas in New York City. My favorite show opening thing ever, and I kind of want to just use it for my life. She gets on stage and she's like, fuck the audience and fuck the critics. This one's for my friends.
Yeah.
I just started screaming and I'm like, ah. So that's what I want to like kind of have the intention of this. Fuck the audience and fuck the critics. This one's for my friends.
Right. So maybe I'll have to take that. I'll make that the intro.
I almost died. I've never forgotten that moment. It's so
I'll
good.
no, maybe I'll craft something together with my weird audio shit. I like to cut and paste stuff, so
Cool.
maybe I'll build something like that. We'll have a little intro song.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
gotta ask you, who did the piece with the rabbit?
That is from, there's a cat and a rabbit. That is from the oldest taxidermy store in the world, which is in Paris.
And it's like, so it's just like a medical taxidermy
Medical,
thing.
they had a whole bunch of science illustrations. The taxidermy shop, it was open for like 160, 170 years. It burned to the ground. They lost most of their shit, and a bunch of the patrons like donated taxidermed animals back to them so they could reopen, which I thought was like so cute.
Right.
The cutest dead animal story I've ever heard.
Jesus Christ, we're going long. It's like gonna kill me in 10 minutes again.
I know you're gonna have a lot of editing. We should probably pinch it
It's fine. Yeah, pinch
off.
it off. On that note, pinch and wipe. It's time to go, kids.
Maybe that's how we end.
But yeah, if you get a chance and you think about it, take a nice picture of that rabbit thing for me, because I'm working on an art thing for my friend Bunny that passed away. So
Oh, cool.
I don't know. I'm sitting here talking to you the whole time, and like
This rabbit.
it's where my head's at right now. So I'm gonna like. That's what I'm working on this week, besides the website and doing the other stuff, is putting together a bunch of stuff for her finally. We've got the CD done. We're going to be doing an event, an art show. So we'll see. It'll be
Yeah,
cool.
there was a, I can't remember, somebody I know. I feel like it was people in Chicago. Oh no, it was people in England. I did the Mongo rally with. They posted about their friend, and then another person posted about their friend, and I wrote a poem about it.
Oh,
And the
really?
first line is, "So you've reached the age at which the dying starts, and it keeps going from here." I'll send you that poem.
Yeah, I could really use that, because I'm at that age. I mean, 45, it's not that old, but like I'm an old ass 45. I've
Yeah.
been through a lot of shit. I mean, hey, I've been doing meth for 20 years. It's like, so I've lived a hell of a lot more life than most of these fuckers, because
Yeah.
I don't sleep.
Right. Totally. I'm a decade past you.
Yeah.
Nobody believes that. People have carded me. They're like, you are not that old. I'm like, I am. I'm 54. It's fucking weird.
Right.
Ask me how.
Yeah,
I
well, you look great.
try. I mean, I actually am like kind of a semi jock now. Like I was
Yeah.
never good at sports or PE, never interested, never what I was like this, like, you know.
Yeah.
I think the most workout I got was the mosh pit as a punk rock kid. And now all of a sudden I'm like, I mean, it's also the testosterone, honestly, which is super fun.
I
Like
bet.
to go through like a whole hormone change,
I
you know.
bet, 'cause that's just like I was I like, it's like a new world to me, you know. And so I'm always like, just I'll ask a lot of questions because I'm just a curious person,
Yeah.
and it's like I want to know, you know. And it's like I just think that's got to be interesting, because it's like I was a teenage boy. I know what that felt like, and I can't imagine being at your age, you know, born female, and you're taking these things are coming into your body at that stage in your life. It's like
It's fucking weird. Like, yo, I
fucking
have a
crazy.
razor now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to shave my face. I have to ask my dude friends. I'm like, so how do you shave your face? I mean, it's not like huge, but I can feel like this
Yeah.
sort of like,
If you
yeah. And
do
so,
it
like, my body.
a lot, it'll get thicker.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Because
It's
that's like,
like,
I
I
started
think
doing it at 12 because I thought it would be fucking cool. And like, my shit's, it grows. I get it. I like, if I shave it all off, I've had this beard my whole life. Like, I've had this beard and this haircut. Like, I don't know. It's worked for 30 fucking years, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like the facial hair is probably my least favorite part.
Yeah.
But like my body stopped producing hormones altogether. And I was like, fuck you. I was using those. So now I'm
Right.
on all three. I'm on a low dose of estrogen and progesterone, and I'm on a regular, like normal size dose of testosterone. But it's it's like having new toys to play with. I'm
That's
like,
interesting though, but you still needed some amount of estrogen, right?
yeah, my naturopath is like, look, your body's had this for your entire life. Like, you will feel more elastic emotionally and physically. And like, I was like, cool, I'm signing up for that. So it's
Yeah.
like,
Again, it's one of those things that like the one part of you probably wants to rebel against that and be like, fuck that
oh, totally. Like, I had to work through a whole
shit.
bunch of shit when she was like, you got to take female hormones. And I'm like,
I tell you
but
what,
I
though,
get kind of
like,
like,
I
yeah.
can only imagine to somebody that's in a similar position as you how inspiring you would be. Because, I mean, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum, and you're inspiring as shit to me. So,
Awesome. Thank you.
I love that attitude where it's like, you can still be like, fuck you, but like, take care of yourself, goddammit. Like, you know, it's.
Yeah.
And, like, let it go at some point when it's time to let it go. And, I don't know. I learned that way too late in my life. And I think that's another thing that like I want to talk about that more to get that out there to people that fucking just apologize, like, you
Learn
know,
to be wrong. Learning to be wrong. I mean,
yeah.
like, I had a teacher
Own your
who
shit.
basically taught us that the best thing you can do is to say, I don't know,
Yeah.
because that's when you get the new shit. And like, I remember that going in when I was like, I don't know what, it's early 20s or whatever. And I was like, so like, that's just been, it's hard to admit that I'm wrong, but it's
Yeah.
like, I don't have time to fuck around with like holding grudges or whatever the fuck other people are doing. Or like, you know, just there was like, I kept knocking things over yesterday, and I was like really practicing not being angry about it, because it's just fucking gravity. I was like,
Yeah.
gravity's extra strong today,
Well, it's just shit.
apparently.
It's just shit. Like, I used to be so hung up on possessions and shit, and now I'm just like, God, get rid of this fucking shit. Like,
Yeah.
Look at my room. I mean, it's like I'm surrounded by fucking pop culture. Like it eats me alive daily. And I when I started well with that, it was that's all it was literally because we were both ridiculous Skinny Puppy fans. I had a bunch of CDs up, and he's like, "Hey, I'll trade you one for one for Skinny Puppy vinyl for them fucking CDs." And I was like, "Are you retarded?" And I was like, listening to him talking, I'm like, "You are retarded. Fuck yeah, I'll take those fucking records off your hands, you dumbass." And like, I was like, okay, well, ship me the records because I ain't sending you shit till I see the records. Like, I know what I got, and I know I'm a stand-up person, but you sound like a fucking scumbag and a half. And I wasn't wrong, but I got the damn records. But I mean, it was when you could get the people's phone numbers off eBay.
Right.
And so he calls me and sets this deal up. He calls me the next day. Hey man, what are you doing? Going to work. Fuck are you doing? Oh, I'm just sitting here, man. I want to talk about Skinny Puppy some more, man. I'm like, I gotta go to work. I have a life. Like, I'll call you when I get the fucking records. Oh, they're good records, man. I love it. I love Skinny Puppy. I'm like, cool. I gotta go. And like, but you know, when I got arrested and I went on my probation, I couldn't leave my house, and I talked to him every day on the phone.
Wow.
We hung out over the phone. I'd do my yard work outside when I'd come home. We talk all night, every fucking night. And he died. He got murdered
Wow.
right before he was supposed to move out here. I never
Yikes.
met him in person.
Wow.
And his death still to this day fucks me up.
Yeah.
And I had so many people go, well, you never even met him in person. How could you be that upset? And I'm like, fuck you. Like, if you can't understand how two human beings can connect and never physically be in the same place, like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Well, this is like, so this is another thing I'd love to talk about is relationship anarchy. And I'm not talking
Yeah.
about poly people using the words they think it sounds edgy.
Yeah, 'cause fuck that
I have this
shit.
tattoo on my arm that says, "You've got music in you," which is from a rental car counter in Cancun.
Of course.
When people are like, relationship anarchy is about being alive for the relationship that's there. And it doesn't have to be proximate, right? It can be from a distance. It can be like,
Oh, absolutely.
so this guy in, Cancun, it was like basically super hectic tourists getting angry, like, don't ruin my vacation, right? It's like really fucking angry and shitty in there. And there's three lines. I'm in the middle line, and I was like, just like, I do a lot of like, shaking. I've learned like an animal, you shake it off. Like, this is something I've learned in therapy. So, like, I got up to the counter and I was just like, how are you? And the guy's like, it's kind of intense in here. I'm like, it's
Ready to
very
fucking
intense.
kill
We're
himself.
having this little bubble of an interaction. And I just kind of like went, oh God. And he goes, you have music in you. And I was like, I am
Oh.
thinking me. He's like, you have music in you. And it was like this beautiful little moment, right? In the middle of this
We can
very
smell our own.
shitty fucking experience. And so, like, this, I mean, literally, I can have a relationship. People ask me, can you have a relationship with your barista? And I'm like, fuck yeah, I can.
Yeah,
Fuck
that's
yeah, I can.
beautiful. I like that concept because it's like, I don't know, it's just like I said, like just doing meth with fucking weird people in the gay scene, and they're all fucking naked and fucking having sex and shit. But they're the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life. My dealer, he's one of the most fucking well-educated, well-rounded, amazing people I've ever met in my life. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for the world. And so we don't live by these expectations, the binaries and the fucking rules. We're led by our heart, you know, and what we know. And you got music in your heart, then that's where you go.
By
So
like following the meaning and following the connection and following the aliveness, right?
yeah,
And be in very strange and unusual places.
absolutely. And that's
So
okay.
That's all, folks.